ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। सो नाउ वी आर सीइंग आफ्टर सीइंग द पार्ट द पोर्शन वेर इन जीवन मुक्ति वॉज एक्सप्लेन्ड देन इवन विदेह मुक्ति वॉज एक्सप्लेन्ड देन द वर्सेस विच आर revealing the swarupam of Brahman. Brahma swarupa pratipadaka shlokaha. The verses which reveal the nature of Brahman. Whenever you use the word Brahman, we should remember the verses revealing the nature of the reality. So we finished the 57th verse. The 57th verse, when we saw the nature of Brahman, an important thing we have to remember is the reality is that which cannot be negated as an object of knowledge. When you negate all the objects of knowledge and that which remains unnegatably as an object is what? The reality. What is it which cannot be negated as an object of knowledge? The subject of knowledge, isn't it? The knower alone cannot be negated as an object of knowledge. Everything else can be negated as an object of knowledge. So when you arrive at the knower, then you see what this knower is, and that which is available for recognition as the knower is the reality Brahman. So reality is not the knower, but reality is available for recognition as the knower. Big difference, isn't it? That is what is we saw in the important thing we saw in the previous verse. So now we'll go to the 58th verse. If you really want to see what is there in the 57th verse, and we have to go back to the recorded thing and we have to, can listen. Because now we are enthusiastic to finish the text so that we can start a new text. Anyway. Akhandanandarupasya tasyanandalavashritaha. Akhandanandarupasya tasyanandalavashritaha. Brahmadhyastaratam yena. Brahmadhyastaratam yena. Bhavantyanandinokhilah. This is a very interesting verse. What he says here, let's see the literal meaning first, then I'll go for the explanation. See, bhavanti. Bhavanti means become. Akhilaha anandinaha bhavanti. Akhilaha means what now? All the beings become happy. Anandinaha means they're happy. Okay? All the beings here become happy. Which means all the beings in this world, they are pleased, they experience pleasure. There's something called experience of pleasure, isn't it? That when people experience pleasure, not only people, all the beings here experience pleasure. They have an experience of pleasure, which means they all become happy. Anandinaha bhavanti. See, kaschit purushaha anandi bhavati means what now? Anandaha means happiness. Anandi means one who is happy. One who has happiness is anandi. It's an akaranta shabdaha. So, anandin purushaha means happy person. Anandi, anandinau, anandinaha means happy people, isn't it? So, our beings here become very happy. It means they all experience pleasure. Isn't it? Who are all becoming happy here? If we say, the beings of different levels, they experience different degrees of happiness. Different degrees of pleasure, in fact. Suppose if you say Hiranyagarbha, Brahma means Hiranyagarbha, Brahma Adhyaha. See, we do not know what highest degree of pleasure, highest degree of happiness experienced by Hiranyagarbha. We do not know who Hiranyagarbha is, we do not know what it means. It is said, Hiranyagarbha is Ishvara. Ishvara means what? Even the, you know, samashti sukshma prapanchaha. So this we say Hiranyagarbha's happiness is the highest of the, you know, highest degree of happiness. This is a very beautifully explained in Taittiriya Upanishad. If you want, you can even listen to my Taittiriya Upanishad talks also. I have explained very clearly there. Which means highest degree of pleasure that is possibly experienceable here, is it? That is the Hiranyagarbha's pleasure, happiness. And now we can say different degrees of pleasure experienced by different beings also. Even people of higher, you know, the beings of higher planes, the heavenly beings, etc. We do not even know. You can say any heavenly pleasure also is what? We don't know what is heavenly pleasures, isn't it? All those pleasures, and there in Taittiriya Upanishad beautifully, it starts like this. First, how to measure ananda, how to measure happiness. To understand the highest degree of happiness, you need to measure happiness, isn't it? And for which you need to know what is, first of all, one unit of happiness. If you understand what is one unit of happiness, and from there onwards, you can understand, you know, what is we can measure happiness based on that unit. So this, the Upanishad presents a human, first of all, a human being. And a human being, and who is this human being? This human, the particular given person, who is very young, energetic, very healthy, and highly educated, academically qualified, and who is very rich also, and very intelligent, highly influential, and who has a very good family, who is married to a rich and beautiful woman, who is also equally intelligent and bright, and who is also from a very highly reputed family, from a very great reputation. No, this person also has relatives and people, lots of, he has manpower, money power, social status, everything. And then he has children who are also very intelligent, handsome and pretty. Who are also very bright, who also get first mark, who come in every sports they're first, education they're first, and other accomplishment they're first. So there's nothing this man is missing. And he has seen the best of, he is the one who is enjoying the best of pleasures available in this world. Nothing he is missing. Anything he wants to have, the next minute he can have. Such a person, what will be his state of mind? What will be his happiness? Upanishad says, that happiness enjoyed by that person is one unit of happiness. which means we all don't have even one. Okay? It's 1 minute of happiness. And based on that, then he can say, okay? And this, that, then we have Deva, Devanandaha, Deva Gandharvanandaha, Manushyanandaha, then Manushya Gandharvanandaha, the happiness of a human being, then happiness of Manushya Gandharva, who is little, no, a superior, another being. Like that, there is different degrees of happiness, you know, different measures of happiness, is presented in Taittiriya Upanishad. Anyway, and all that, the happiness, what is important here is, all the pleasure, different degrees of pleasure or happiness experienced by all the people, in ordinary, the 1 unit of happiness experienced by the human being onwards, all different degrees of pleasure and happiness experienced by the beings of different levels of, you know, the levels of people also, and even to the highest degree of happiness experienced by even Hiranyagarbha, all these experience of pleasure or happiness is possible because of what? Because of Brahmanandaha. Because Anandaha is fullness. And any experienced Anandaha, any pleasure, is fraction of that fullness alone. Any pleasure, any happiness experienced by any being here is nothing but fraction of that fullness alone. What is fullness? Fullness is the nature of the reality. Which means we have to understand here, when do we have that pleasure? I'll explain to you here. How do we say pleasure is fraction of fullness? How do we say this? This is an important lesson you have to understand here. Before understanding how happy the pleasure is a fraction of fullness, we need to understand what is fullness first of all. The fullness and limitlessness are synonyms. And if you understand fullness and limitlessness are synonyms, you will also have to understand the happiness is another word for fullness. There is no other meaning for the word happiness other than fullness. When we say I am happy, we really express your state of mind you are experiencing, which is a pleasure only, which is a fraction. So, this is very important for us to understand these three words being synonyms. Fullness means limitlessness. Limitlessness means happiness. They are not three different words. If you do not understand what fullness means, what limitlessness means, you can never understand what happiness is. See, what we want is happiness. What we are seeking is happiness. Happiness means sorrowlessness, painlessness. So, what we seek is happiness means, and Upanishads, all the scriptures, all the Vedantic texts, they repeatedly say one thing. What you are seeking is happiness. And that happiness also is what now? Everlasting happiness. Everlasting means what? We are not interested in happiness which comes and goes. We want happiness which is going to be there permanently. If something has to be there permanently, it should not have the beginning, isn't it? If what you want to have, you want it to be there forever, then it should not have the beginning also. Isn't it? Suppose we want to have something, and which you are going to get it newly, and you want it to be there forever, it is illogical, isn't it? Why? Because anything which is gained newly, anything which comes, has to go. So anything which comes newly has to go. Anything which has a beginning has definitely an end. That is the law of nature. Nothing is permanent. Therefore, the happiness what I am seeking, if it has, and then is definitely something which is going to be there forever. I am not interested in happiness which is going to come to an end. If it should not have an end, then that means it should not have beginning also. If it should not have a beginning also, then it must be eternal. Happiness must be eternal. If this happiness is something to, if it has to be eternal, then definitely it must be what? Already there. And the scriptures also say, yes, what you are interested in is something which is permanent. A permanent thing cannot have a beginning. It must be beginningless, which means it is eternal. Eternal means, and that is why what is already there, you need not accomplish, you need not achieve or attain or reach. Which is already there means, all that is there is you need to know. Therefore, happiness is something to be discovered. And that happiness, how is it available for discovery? Only as the nature of the reality. Because reality and happiness are not two different things. Like sun and brilliance are not two different things. Fire and heat are not two different things. So reality and happiness are not two different things. If you know what the reality is, then definitely you know what happiness is. Which means you cannot know happiness as it is, isn't it? In fact, happiness is expression of fullness. When can you express fullness? Only when you discover fullness. So happiness is another word for expression of fullness. And fullness can be expressed only when you discover it. When you do not know what fullness is, how can you express it, isn't it? And what is fullness here? How do we say fullness and happiness are synonyms, or limitlessness are synonyms? Here, the unhappiness is being limited, is being unhappy. Is it being limited is being unhappy. Being subject to limitations is being unhappy. So being limitless is being happy. Being limited is being bound, and being bound is being unhappy. So being limitless is being free, and being free is being happy. Therefore, may convert that verb in another word into noun form now. Being limitless is equal to what? Being limitless is limitlessness. And being free is what? Freedom. What is freedom? What is limitlessness? So being limitless is being happy. Being happy is happiness. Is it clear now? Therefore, limitlessness and happiness are synonyms. Now, being limitless means what? Being time-wise, spatially, object-wise. Being limitless means being full. Being, is it? So, limited means being inadequate. Being a limited means, individual means being an inadequate. Being inadequate. Being small. So being limited is being small, being inadequate. So being limitless means being free from inadequacy, means being full. So being a fraction. Is it being limited means being a fraction? Or being the limit inadequate means being unhappy also. But being full means being free from inadequacy. Therefore, fullness also is what now? Actually, limitlessness. Limitlessness is happiness. And here again, now we have to understand, how do we say that fullness, to understand, happiness is limitlessness, limitlessness is fullness, we understand this. How is it this fullness, the nature of the reality? Remember one thing, reality is called Satyam, isn't it? Satyam means what? Satyam means that which is absolutely real. That which is absolutely real means what? That which is self-existent. That which does not depend upon anything else for its existence is Satyam. Absolutely real means it is does not depend upon anything else for its existence, which is self-existent. And second thing, even when existing also, it has no beginning, it has no end also. That is what is absolutely real Satyam. And this Satyam alone, that which is self-existent, that which is beginninglessly, endlessly, changelessly, independently there, lends existence to everything else. Okay, that which lends existence to everything else. I'll give you an example here. Now when we say the water, the H2O, one substance, isn't it, is not dependent on the ocean for its existence. With reference to ocean, we say water is the Satyam. Because water is not dependent on the ocean or the waves for its existence, at the same time, water lends existence to all the waves and the ocean. Independent, the same time lends existence to the ocean, the names and forms, ocean and waves. Similarly, that which is there beginninglessly, endlessly, independently, then that which lends existence to this entire cosmos of varieties of beings is this Jagat Satyam. Satyam. So that which lends existence is what now? The existence of this universe. So that reality is there. The reality, how is it here now in this universe? When you see the ocean, you have no doubt at all, water is there as the very existence of the ocean. The truth of the ocean is very much there as the, in what form does the reality exist there in the ocean? Is it? The reality, the truth of the ocean is there in the form of existence of the ocean. If you remove the reality, the ocean will lose its existence. For the existence of the ocean is dependent on the water, the reality. Therefore, water is there as the existence of the ocean. Similarly, when you see this whole cosmos also, the cosmos has no independent existence. And this cosmos is what now? It also is not there always. It comes and goes. It comes and goes means what? It is not there all the time. If it is there means you would not have had all three states of experience also. There's a time you experience this universe, there's a time it is not available for experience. Isn't it? Which means everything comes and goes here, nothing is permanent, and this universe of constantly changing forms and names is also what now? It has no independent existence means the reality is also here in the form of the existence of this universe. The reality is very much here in the form of the existence of this universe. But what is that which is here lending existence to this universe? the reality is, even though I am not able to recognize the reality is very much here in the form of the existence of this universe. My non-recognition of reality here does not mean non-existence of the reality. What is the proof? Universe is itself is the proof for what? The reality being there as the existence of the universe. Now, okay, that which lends existence to the universe is the reality. Now from existence, you have to come to the next point. What is that? The reality which lends existence must be pervasive of the universe. There is no way of lending existence to any nama rupa, name and form, without pervading the name and form. Water cannot lend existence to ocean without pervading the ocean. Is it? So being pervasive means being full. Is it clear? Filling. So being pervasive means filling. Filling means being full. And to fill the entire ocean, all the waves, to be pervasive of the ocean, to pervade the ocean, to fill the ocean, what effort does the water need to do? What action should the water do? No karma, no action is required, no effort is required. Why? Because being full is the nature of the reality which lends existence, which is the very existence of the ocean. So sat, the existence of the ocean, is pervasive of the ocean, isn't it? Therefore, with reference to ocean, the water, the existence, is what? Is the fullness. With reference to ocean, what is the fullness? What does the word fullness mean with reference to ocean and water? Fullness is nothing but the swabhava, swarupam, the nature of the water. With reference to ocean. Can you see separately the fullness? Isn't it? Fullness is something to be understood. How do you understand? If you know, understand the existence, reality being the existence of the ocean, then you understand water, the reality being the existence of ocean, you can understand what fullness being the very nature of the water with reference to ocean. Is it clear? Fullness is not something to be understood separately. You can never understand fullness if you do not understand the existence, the meaning of the word existence. You can understand the meaning of the word existence if you do not understand how it is the reality. Is it clear? Therefore, water, the H2O, the reality of the ocean, which is the existence of the ocean, is what of the nature of fullness. Similarly here, we say the consciousness, which is of the nature of limitlessness, the limitless reality, time-wise, spatially, object-wise, limitless reality, which is free from all difference, which you have seen already, which is free from all differences also, sajatiya, vijatiya, swagata, bhedas, all these differences also, that reality is what now? The absolute reality, which is beginningless, endless, changeless, and which is independent, that reality is what now? Independently existing reality, alone is in the form of existence of this universe. Therefore, the consciousness, the limitless reality, which is in the form of the existence of the universe, what now? it pervades the universe. Without being pervasive, lending existence is not possible. Being the existence means being pervasive. Being pervasive means being full. And to fill the universe, to be full of the universe, to pervade the universe, what effort should consciousness do? No effort is required on the part of consciousness to fill the universe, to pervade the universe, because we are not able to recognize that reality being manifest as the existence of the universe. That is studying Shastram, isn't it? But that reality, now how do you understand? That's why we study Shastram. It's available for recognition only in your mind. Is it? As very Swarupam, truth of the knower, consciousness. You've understood that. So now consciousness, which is the existence of, lends existence to the universe, which is in the form of existence of the universe, is of the nature of fullness. Is it clear? Okay? So where is the reality available for reality? Where is the reality? The where reality is not. Everywhere it is. When is it? Always it is. When is it not? Always it is. Where is it? Everywhere. In which? In everything. As everything. It is there. Therefore, the reality which is in the form of the existence of the universe, which is available for recognition only in one's own mind as the very Swarupam, the truth of the I, the knower, subject of knowledge, non-objectifiable, isn't it reality? The pure consciousness is of the nature of fullness. Is it clear now? So being fullness is what? Being full is its nature means being limitless also is its Swarupam nature. To be beginninglessness is what? It's nature. Endlessness is nature. Changelessness is its nature. Therefore, time-wise, spatially, because it's the only reality, secondless reality, it is what now? Object is also limitless. Therefore, being full and being limitless is being happy. How do you arrive at it now? Being full is being limitless. Being limitless is being happy. How do we say that? Because being a fraction is being small and inadequate. Being small and inadequate is being limited. Being limited is being unhappy. Is it clear? You have to come from there only. What is unhappiness? You say, then we can come to what is happiness. What is unhappiness? Being inadequate is being a fraction. Being a fraction means being limited. Being limited is being unhappy. Therefore, being free from being full is what? Being full is being limitless. Being limitless is being happy. And we may convert it into noun form, then fullness is happiness. Is it clear now? What is happiness now? Happiness is no expression of one's recognition of fullness. If you have recognized the reality in your own mind as your own real nature, then you recognized fullness. You need not recognize the reality first, then you need not recognize fullness. Understand? If you know water, you know what fullness is with reference to ocean. So recognition of the self being consciousness is recognition of fullness. Recognition of fullness expressed is happiness. Is it clear now? Therefore, any pleasure, this was one step you have to understand here. The next step, how do we say this fraction, this pleasure is anything which is experienced? Now I tell you, happiness, is it an object of experience now? Tell me. Is happiness an object of experience? Why? Because reality consciousness is not an object of experience. Therefore, is what? No. Even the pure existence is not object of experience. Therefore, the limitlessness also is what? Not an object of experience. Full happiness is not an object of experience. Happiness is the very nature of the experiencer. What is happiness? But we are working hard for experiencing happiness. As long as, I have said something very important point here. We are working very hard for experiencing happiness. You can never experience happiness. Why? Because happiness is the very swarupam, nature of the very experiencer. Now, what is this pleasure? Why do we say anything that we experience now? Any happiness, you know, when you say, I'm happy, you're happy, he's happy, Brahma. Whoever is happy, 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 we say, hey, the experience of pleasure, isn't it? What we experience as a pleasure is a fraction of, the manifestation of that fraction of fullness is pleasure. Manifestation of fraction of fullness is pleasure. Is it clear? Now, when do we experience that pleasure, which is a manifestation of fraction of that fullness? See, whenever ahankara is resolves. Whenever ahankara resolves. In deep sleep state, ahankara is temporarily resolved for some time. If you fall asleep, you have a deep sleep for 7 hours or 8 hours. You do not know you are, isn't it? Which means the knowledge I am is temporarily resolved for 8 hours. When there is no knowledge I am, the ahankara is resolved temporarily for a short while, then you cannot have any identity. Without this knowledge I am being there, identity is not possible. In sleep you don't have identity. In sleep, do you have any identity? Whether you are a man or a woman or who you are? When no identity is there, there is no identity with any given form or a personality. Therefore, even the body, all the problems of the, isn't it, your object of identity. Therefore, there is no superimposition of limitations also on you. Isn't it? If you have identity with the body or anything, then the limitations of that what you identified with become your limitations. Therefore, whenever when you yourself are not there, resolved, then identity is not possible. Therefore, the limitations also, you are free from sense of inadequacy centered on I. You are free from the sense of being small, centered on I. Why? I itself is not there. Whenever you're free from the sense of the fundamental problem of sense of being small, centered on I is not there, you are free from sense of inadequacy for a short while, then there is, isn't it? There is no pain, there is no dukkham. Therefore, when there is no dukkham, isn't it? There's no pain. Then there is only sukham. Sukham. That's why sleep is what? Anandaha. But that is not swarupa anandaha. That is experiential ananda. You experience painlessness, sorrowlessness. It's also what? Is it? Pleasure. Highest degree of pleasure you have in sleep. Absence of experience of pains and pleasures. That's also an experience only. That pleasure you have in sleep is experiential. Why? Because it is not permanent. Because you wake up, it goes. It comes when you fall asleep. It goes when you wake up. It is time bound. Is it clear? So whenever I sense resolves, you are free from the problem of sense of inadequacy or smallness being centered on I. Whenever you are free from the sense of inadequacy being centered on I, there is sukham. How long that is resolved, then there is it? There is sukham. So what is the, now what is the cause for your sorrow? Cause of your sorrow, is it? Not because there is no happiness. Is not because of absence of happiness you become unhappy. Happiness is always there. In spite of yourself being happiness, there is unhappiness. Isn't it? You become unhappy, you become sorrowful, you become sad, you grieve. Isn't it? Why? Because this is whenever there is sense of inadequacy or smallness centered on I is there, is it? Then that it's a smallness, sense of smallness, sense of being small. And I is the cause for your sorrow. I am small. This notion causes pain. I'm inadequate. This notion is the cause for the pain. This notion is because of the ignorance of the self. Therefore we say ignorance of self is the root cause of unhappiness. Hope it's very clear, isn't it? Now let us come to this now. This is in the deep sleep, so it's fine. What about in waking state? In waking state also, you experience fractions of pleasure. Fullness, is it? Many times. Any object of pleasure, a given object, when you are experiencing or enjoying, if you are enjoying nice cup of coffee or ice cream, or when you are enjoying nice, good lunch, or you are watching some nice drama you are watching, it can be an object of intellectual pleasure or aesthetic pleasure, or sensory pleasure, doesn't matter. Some object of pleasure. It can be different degree of, isn't it? Any object of pleasure. When you're enjoying, and then that object you are of pleasure, object holds your attention totally. You're watching a television serial, or sir, you're watching something, completely your mind is totally grabbed by that particular object. Your attention is totally held by the dance or music or drama or television serial or the food you are eating or something you are enjoying. Even the social life sometimes, your completely attention is held by a given object of object. Then what happens? Whenever attention is totally held by a given object, then there is possibility of forgetting yourself. For a short while, you forget yourself. Why you forget yourself totally? The attention of your mind is completely held by another object. So whenever you forget yourself, your sense of smallness centered on I also resolves for a short while. However long the sense of smallness or inadequacy centered on I resolves is not there for a short, however long it is not there, then there's a state of mind which is called pleasure. Is it clear now? That state of mind pleasure which is there is nothing but surfacing of the fraction of fullness which is your own nature. That the state of mind which is there is surfacing of the fraction of fullness means, why we say here, how long it stays that pleasure. Not because it's fullness, the pleasure is not from the object. The object is instrumental for that fullness to surface. But why do you call it a fraction? Because it doesn't stay for long. Why? Because the object goes, again you remember yourself, attention is nothing to hold attention, so you come back to yourself. Once I comes, you remember yourself, the sense of smallness and I also comes along with that, then that pleasure goes. It's called Vishayanandaha. Understand? What is Vishayanandaha means what? The pleasure, a state of mind which is nothing but surfacing of the fraction of fullness which is there only when one forgets oneself, thereby when one's sense of smallness is resolved for some time, and for which the external object becomes only instrumental. Hope you understood it. Which means the pleasure is not from the object. The pleasure is only an instrument, is it? It's only instrumental for you to hold your attention, that to help you forget yourself for a while, isn't it? Then your smallness also remains resolved for a while. Then there is a state of mind which is pleasure. It's a very interesting thing, fact, for which Ramakrishna Paramahamsa gives an example in his book. Suppose there's a dog, the dog is there, and somebody offers a bone to the dog, and this dog starts chewing this bone. It starts chewing the bone, all is a dry bone, isn't it? Because inside the mouth, the tissues are very soft. When it's chewing the bone, slowly the soft tissues get really wounded and the blood starts oozing from its own mouth. But the idiot dog thinks the blood is from the bone. Is it? It's coming out of its own wound. But for the for the wound to happen, for the tissues to get wounded, for the blood to come out, ooze out also, the bone became only instrumental. Isn't it? The bone is only nimittam for the blood to come out. Similarly, the blood is not from the bone. Similarly, whenever we experience any pleasure for a short while, there is only a fraction of fullness. The surfacing of the fraction of fullness. Isn't it? Therefore, in ignorance, even whenever you forget yourself, the sense of inadequacy, the smallness centered on I resolves for a while, then there is a state of mind which is pleasure, which is a surfacing of the fraction of fullness which is already you. You are yourself. That is why many people like to booze also, are given to drugs also, because it helps them to forget themselves. They go for this pleasure. But the Shastram says, if you know what you are, you can resolve this I sense intellectually for good. Cognitively you can resolve I sense for good. I am Brahman, aham Brahmasmi. I am consciousness. If you resolve identity with Brahman intellectually, then the fullness, you need not, it's not an object of experience. No, in knowledge, in the wake of knowledge of the self being consciousness, when you intellectually or cognitively resolve your essence in the consciousness, as aham Brahmasmi, I am consciousness, then fullness is not something to be, not an object of experience which comes and goes, which is not Vishyananda, which is not dependent on any external object. You have to just take ownership of that fullness as your very nature, which will not go. Is it clear? Something very important. Hope I made it very clear. Have I?
Yes.
I talked about this pleasure in different contexts. For one to have a state of mind which is pleasure is possible only when one's sense of smallness, the inadequacy centered on I, is resolved for some time. For which the very I has to be resolved for some time. So the objects actually, no, they have to totally hold you. Total attention has to be held. Then you are not there. The same thing in samadhi also. Your person is given the practice of meditation. Then he forcefully resolves the I, but he is ignorant, like in sleep. How in sleep effortlessly I resolves? For a short while. In samadhi also, consciously resolve the I, but still ignorance is there. That is why samadhi also is an experience. And that's why you will come out of samadhi, like how you, when you wake up from sleep, again I sense comes, again smallness comes, again, you know, again sukham that goes, pleasure goes. So from samadhi also when you come back, that will go. Is it clear? This is the important lesson here. I am going to give some time for you to ask questions. Is it clear or not? Okay. Now, this is what is said in this verse. Again, if you come back to the verse now. So, akhilaha brahmadyaha taratamyena anandinaha bhavanti. Would you mind turning off the light, baby? So, Brahmadyaha Akhilaha, right from Brahma onwards, Hiranyagarbha onwards, and then all the beings here, you know, Taratamyena means in different proportions, different degrees, isn't it? Different proportions. Taratam means in varied proportions, they all, what now, experience pleasure. All the beings experience pleasure. They become happy, isn't it? So, all the beings, the happiness of all the beings, the pleasure, different degrees of pleasures, the different pleasures experienced in the different proportions by all these beings, all of them are what? He says, Lava Ashritaha. Lava means what? Fraction. They are dependent on the fraction of that fullness. Lava Ananda Lava Ashritaha means all these beings which are happy, they're dependent on the fraction of that fullness. Whose fullness? The fullness of happiness of Brahman, the reality, who is of the nature of fullness. Is it clear now? So, all these beings, right from Brahma, become happy, and all of them are dependent on the fraction of happiness of the reality, which is of the nature of fullness. Akhanda Anandasya. Akhanda Anandasya Tasya. Who is Akhanda Anandaha? The reality, isn't it? The reality is of the nature of fullness. And Tasya Ananda Lava Ashritaha. Lavaha means fraction. Ashita means dependent. Because any pleasure when you experience, what is that? Any pleasure when you experience, that is fraction of manifestation of full happiness of reality, fullness of reality. Every wave is a fraction of water, the ocean. Isn't it? Similarly, any experience of any pleasure of any being in the world is fraction of, manifestation of, fraction of fullness, and which is the nature of Brahman, the reality. Hope I made it very clear. Is it clear or not? Okay. So, Akhanda Ananda Rupasya, the one who is of the form of fullness, one whose form is nothing but happiness. What is the form of water with reference to ocean? Fullness. What is the form, in what form, reality is? If you say, reality is in the form of fullness. Pervasiveness, isn't it? Therefore, reality, Brahman, the reality, which is of the form of fullness and happiness, that reality's happiness of tasya ananda lava ashritaha, depending upon the manifestation of fraction of that fullness alone, all these beings, right from Brahmaji to the, even the pleasure experienced by the organisms also, all is pleasure but fraction of that, depending upon that fraction, fullness alone, all of them become happy. Even for pleasure, you are dependent on Brahma. Is it clear now? Even for pleasure, the pleasure is not from an object of knowledge. That's what you want to say here. See, happiness also is Brahma. Fullness is Brahma. Pleasure also is Brahma. What do we think? Pleasure is from an object. That's why we call it an object of pleasure. See, object of pleasure is not from an object. The object serves as an instrument, isn't it, for triggering that fraction of fullness which is your own nature to surface. Is it clear? Therefore, if at all there is any pleasure, if at all there is any happiness experienced, that happiness experienced, that pleasure experienced is nothing but manifestation of fraction of the fullness. What now? Whose fullness? Reality is Brahman the Seva. So what is the lesson here now? For your happiness, don't wait for experience. Know yourself. Take ownership of fullness as your own nature. Is it clear? Okay. If it is not clear, so don't worry. We will have to repeat it. Very important lesson this is. Do you want me to give some time to ask you questions? For you to ask questions? Okay, let me go to the next one. Because I can't help. These words are all revealing the nature of reality. I can't help. Tadyuktamakhilam vastu vyavaharastadanvitaha. Tadyuktamakhilam vastu vyavaharastadanvitaha tasmat sarvagatam brahma kshire sarpirivakhile. Tadyuktamakhilam vastu vyavaharastadanvitaha tasmat sarvagatam brahma kshire sarpirivakhile. See, you have to understand tad yuktam akhilam vastu. Akhilam vastu means every object, every existent in this universe. Anything which is called vastu. Anything which is vastu. Sarvam akhilam vastu means every existent object in this universe is what now? Tad yuktam is in fact inseparably associated with that reality. Like how every wave is inseparably associated with water. Even though we use the word association, which itself is wrong. I say every wave is associated with the water means. The word association means what? As though they are two things. They are not two different things. We can't even use the word association. But still I am using it because water is distinct from the wave. Even though not distant from the wave, because of its distinguishability, isn't it? We have to say what now? I can say the water is associated, every wave is associated with the water. Because we have to use two different words, water and wave. Similarly here, every object in this universe, a living thing or a non-living thing, mobile, immobile, everything, akhilam vastu, tad yuktam. You know, tad yukta means associated with that, is an association with that reality. How inseparably, then, vyavaharas tad anvitaha, tad anvitaha. Even the vyavahara, transaction of every transaction here also. Vyavahara means transaction. All the actions, all the functions, you know, all the actions, all the activities, all the functions, all the happenings, all the phenomenal changes which are happening here, all of them, every small phenomenal change, every small action, every small function, every small motion, every thinking here, every winking here, all of them are what? In fact, associated with that Brahman, which means nothing is outside of Brahman, no action, no movement, no phenomenal change, no function, nothing is happening outside of other than Brahman. No existent object is independent of outside of other than Brahman. Everything here is, all the transactions here, all associated inseparably. In fact, they are all happening in Brahman, existent in Brahman. So, sakilam vastu tad anvitam, tad yuktam, akhila sarv, no, akhila vyavaharaha api what? Is tad anvitaha, anvitaha, associated. Therefore, he says, tasmat sarvagatam brahma. Therefore, sarvagatam brahma, the Brahman is what now? All pervasive. All pervasive, in and through it is pervasive. All pervasive. Brahman is sarvagatam brahma. How Brahma, if Brahman is all pervasive, all pervasively Brahman is inseparably, irremovably, can you remove the water and see the ocean there? Never can you remove it, isn't it? Never can you remove the gold and still see the ornament. Similarly, from every action, every function, every motion, every vyavahara, every transaction, every object which is existent, from everything, that which is irremovably, inseparably, no, pervasively there, inseparably there. No, that is Brahman, the reality. Therefore, how is that here? Kshire sarpihi. Sarpihi means butter. And kshira means milk, isn't it? Avyakta rupena. See, avyaktam here means just as the butter is it inseparably, unobjectifiably there in milk. Milk is objectifiable, but the butter in the milk is not objectifiable. For if you want to objectify the butter, it has to become manifest. Butter has to become manifest, mean what? Butter has to be, you have to churn and take the butter, then butter is objectifiable. See, butter is not available for perception, objectification. It is as good as non-existent when it is not available for transaction, isn't it? Not available. Where is it? It's in the milk. How is it? Inseparably, it is there. Is it clear now? Similarly, just as butter pervades the milk, inseparably it is very much there, so also this reality also imperceptibly, that's what I'm meaning here, imperceptibly it is irremovably pervading everything, in everything in and through it is there. But if you want to recognize that Brahman, which is imperceptibly all pervading everything, in every transaction, in every object, it is inseparably associated, means it's imperceptible, it is unobjectifiable. What do you have to do? You have to churn your own mind. If you churn your mind, then what happens now? Then, like how butter you get out of the milk, you get out of what now? You get out of your own mind what? You get this reality, you arrive at that reality being consciousness as the very nature, swarupam of the knower I, subject of knowledge, very perceiver. The very nature of the perceiver, not as object of perception. You have to not short stretch the example there. You have to leave it there. When you see the milk is perceptible, but is butter perceptible? Not perceptible, is it? How is butter then? In unmanifest form, undifferentiated form. Oh, this is milk, this is butter. Undifferentiated, unmanifest form. Isn't it? But when do you see the butter? Only when you churn it. Is it? Similarly, here also, Brahman, you have to take only two things. Brahman is there, pervading everything. No? That's why he says, tadyuktam, tadyuktam, tad anvitam. Every transaction is what now? In fact, intermingled, isn't it? Nothing is outside of Brahman. But still you are not saying Brahman. You are seeing only the Jagat, you are seeing transactions. Like how you are seeing the milk, you are perceiving the Jagat, you are perceiving the objects, you are perceiving the existent things, you are perceiving the transactions, you are perceiving the phenomenal changes. But what you are not perceiving? The essence, isn't it? The essential nature of all these things. The truth is you are not perceiving. Why? Because it is not objectifiable. It is not perceptible. Imperceptibly, unobjectifiably, reality is there. But if you churn your mind, then you can arrive at it as what? You arrive at that reality as the very nature of the perceiver, the subject. Therefore, existence of Brahman is there with every object. Object is means object enjoys existence. The existence enjoyed by any object is what? Existence of Brahman only. And every object is object of knowledge. Isn't it? Every object also is what now actually? Manifestation of knowledge. And every object also has some desirability, which is also what? It enjoys the nature of Brahman, the fullness. This I taught you very clearly in Dhritarishi Viveka. Hope you understand that. I'm not going into the details of that. Is it clear? Therefore, this verse says, Tadyuktam Akhilam Vastu
Tadyuktam Akhilam Vastu
Vyavaharastadanvitaha Tasmat sarvagatam brahma.
Tasmat sarvagatam brahma.
Shire sarpiriva khile.
Shire sarpiriva khile.
Sarpi actually means ghee. But I said, no, clarified butter is ghee, is it? Anyway, so here one more thing. Everything in this universe is an object of desire, because it is an object of pleasure also. Why object of desire? The desirability. Suppose you may say, no, I don't like this particular computer, I like only this. The whole Jagat, Rajniji, Peter, all of them don't like this laptop. I'm the only person like it. See, there's somebody who likes this, okay? Which means every object has some desirability. There's some people who like it, isn't it? Swamiji says, you may hate mosquitoes. There's a he mosquito who likes a she mosquito. Isn't it? Somebody to like it. Which means every object in this universe, every being in this universe has some desirability, isn't it? Because the desirability is also what? No. Because it's a source of pleasure, isn't it? It is a happiness, object of pleasure. The desirability itself is what now? Priyam, isn't it? It's the, because it is also Brahma. Everything is Brahman. Even though Brahman is not anything here, reality is not anything here, but everything here is what? Brahma. Everything is Brahma. Anyway, so here, we'll go to the next verse. Ananvasthola mahrasvam. It is a mantra, it's called Brihadaranyaka, another mantra's essence is given in the form of this verse. Ananvasthulam
ahrasvam
adirghamajamoyayam arupagunavarnakhyam Tad Brahmetyavadharayet. May one ascertain that to be Brahman. Or that is what is Brahman, no doubt at all. What is that which is Brahman? He says, when you negate everything here, what should be negated here? See, Brahman is that. No, ananu, ananu. Anu means small. Anu means small. Tiny. Ananu means that which is not small is Brahman. Okay? That which is not small is Brahman. When you say, all these small things become negated as non-reality. Mithya, isn't it? What are you interested in? We are interested in only reality. Reality is what is this? All pervasive, because it is unmanifest. Not unmanifest means what? Imperceptible, unobjectifiable. My God! Is something it is not available for objectification, not available for perception, then how can we know? It must be available for objectification. Anything available for the process of objectification alone can be known. But still I have to know Brahman. It is not available for objectification, it is not available for perception. How can I know Brahman then? Still you have to arrive at Brahman. Therefore, this is the way. This is negating what Brahman is not. You have to arrive at the reality only by negating what it is not. Not by knowing what it is. Therefore, ananu. Anuhu means small. Ananu means that which is not small. Which means you negate all the small things as what? Not Brahman. Okay. Na ananu. Then what's now? Asthulam. Okay, not big. Sthula means fat, gross, big. Not, that is not, that which is not subtle, that which is not tiny, that which is not small. If it is, Brahman is not small, is it big then? No. Asthulam, that which is not gross, big, fat. Which means you negate what? All the big, fat, gross things also are negated as non-reality. Then you got what? Ahrasvam, that which is not short. So all the short things, anything measurable, you can, short stands for all the measurables now. Small, big, all measurables, isn't it? Anything which is measurable, what is measurable? Anything which is time-wise or spatially limited. Every object in this universe is what? Time-wise limited or spatially limited or object-wise limited. Therefore, all the time, there's nothing in this universe which is not subject to these threefold limitations. All those which are object to these threefold limitations become negated as non-real, non-reality. Because it is small, measurable. Big, measurable. Short, measurable. Why? Immeasurable is reality. Therefore, ahrasvam adirgham. Not, dirgham means long. Adirgham, again another measure, isn't it? Again, measurable. Long also is measurable. How long? How short? How big? How small? It means what now? It's all measurables. Therefore, anything measurable is subject to limitations. Therefore, all these words are used to say only three to four limitations. Three, four limitations are differently presented here. Adirgha means it is not, neither it is long. That which is not long, that which is not short, that which is, no, which is, that which is neither small or big or gross or subtle. Therefore, anything which is small or big or small or gross or tiny or short or long, it's all non-reality. Adirgham. Then ajam. Then what is it then? Ajam. Why? Because all these objects now, which are subject to these limitations, are measurable. They have spatial limitation, time limitation, object limitation. They are subject, they are measurables. Isn't it? Which means it is ajam. This reality, what is this then? It is, has no beginning at all. Ajam means unborn. Not only, it's not born. Avyayam. It is not subject to any change. Indeclinable, unchangeable, unchanging. Any form? Arupa, arupa guna varnakhyam. That which is said to be free from forms or attributes and colors. Or any different categorizable. It is not, doesn't belong to any given category. It doesn't have any colors, non-categorizable, is it? Doesn't belong to any given species. It is free from attributes. It is of the nature of attributelessness. Then it is of the nature of formlessness. Because there's no form, no color, no category, no attributes. Which means, what do you do now? All those objects, everything in this universe is what now? Categorizable, isn't it? It can be brought under some category or the other. It has some form or the other, some color or the other. It belongs to some species or the other. Everything in this universe is describable, explicable, Why? Because everything has some attribute or the other. Therefore, what is that? All these words negate only one thing. The anything which is perceptible or objectifiable is describable. Okay, therefore, the only one thing which is not objectifiable is the very knower, the experiencer, the subject of knowledge or experience. The subject of knowledge is what? The knower. And what is Brahman? What is that which cannot be negated as an object of knowledge? Is the very knower, the objectifier, is the one who cannot be negated as an object of knowledge. So the Brahman is that which is the very swarupam of the one who objectifies everything, which is your own swarupam, which is you yourself. You negate all these things as objects of knowledge, objectifiable. The only non-objectifiable is the subject of knowledge. And the swarupa of the subject of knowledge is here Brahma. We know that to be Brahman. What is that which cannot be negated, as an object? With all these attributes, only the objectifier, the one who objectifies. Who is the one who is objectifying? You. So, your swarupam is Brahma. This is how one has to arrive at Brahman as one's own real nature. Okay, 61st verse. Before going there, I give you some time to ask me questions.
Just about the objectifier, that's not really clear. Is that the eye? That's the eye, but that's the aham.
Yeah. See, objectifier means, again, objectifying is not an action here. Just you see here. Evident, anything which is evident. Anything which is evident is an object of knowledge. Evident means who is it evident to? Me, isn't it? The whole world is evident. All the forms, colors, sounds, tastes, smells are evident. Your sense powers are evident. Your thoughts are evident. Your intellect is evident. Even the eye sense is evident, isn't it? Evident. They're all evident means, who is self-evident here? Everything is evident to you, and you are self-evident. The one who is objectifying means, the one for whom everything is evident. Because when there is no I, there is no objectification possible. The one in whose presence objectification is possible is the one who is said to be objectifying. Not an action, the presence. The one without whom no perception is possible is the perceiver. The one in whose absence knowing is possible is the knower. Really speaking, there is not an action here. Perceiving is not an action. Knowing is not an action. Objectifying is not an action. If you are, perception is possible. If you are, can you say that I was not there, but still I perceived it? Can you say that? Without I, there cannot be perceiver. Without the perceiver, there cannot be perception. Without the knower, there cannot be knowledge. Without the one to whom everything is evident, there is no objectification possible. And that I, the one in whose presence, in whose absence, objectification or perception or knowledge is not possible. That one is what? I. You will be called what now? Knower, perceiver, the objectifier. Okay, then who? What is the perceiver? The perceiver is consciousness. Consciousness is not the perceiver, knower, seer. But the perceiver is consciousness. Is it clear? If it is not clear, so don't worry. We will take care of it next class. And have you answered your question? Have I? It's time, isn't it? The next mantra is like Adatra Suryo Bhatina Chandra Taharakam. That mantra comes. I was very clear about this. Any pleasure experienced is manifestation of fraction of fullness. That is clear. Therefore, what we experience is only a fraction. Anything which is available for experience, only a fraction. Fullness, happiness can never be experienced. Happiness is not experienceable because happiness is not available for experience, because happiness is the very nature of the very experiencer. Is that clear? One point is clear. Today's class is successful class. Maybe a little difficult, very, very subtle. Only by repeatedly listening, it become clear. For me, it's very clear. When I'm talking to you, I'm really meaning what I say. Any questions? Okay, I will not delay you all. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.